Hi everybody, I'm AJ, I'm an alcoholic. I don't know, I feels a little bit more comfortable to stand. I think I did it like once and I was like, hey, I can deal with this. Speaking is a very like love-hate relationship for me. On one hand, like I was driving up here and I was like, man, I'm going to have like a room full of people listening to me. Like people actually like think I'm important. And then like I get here and I walk through the door and I'm like, oh my God, I can't do this. This is absolutely ridiculous. Like, what are they going to think about me? Like, am I actually going to be able to like help anybody? Are they going to think my hair looks funky? You know, all kinds of just bullshit just starts racing through my head, man. And, you know, through nothing short of the grace of God, like I get to get up here and actually share some sort of experience, some sort of strength and some sort of hope. I don't know, man. I remember I heard a sponsor of mine in California very calmly get up in front of a podium and say, you know, I understand that I have absolutely no part in keeping anybody sober today. Like, I get up here and I tell my story because it keeps me sober at the end of the day. And the reason why I say that is if anybody's anything like me when they first came in here, like, I came into these meetings and I saw, you know, I saw the steps on the wall and I heard these people talking, and it literally was like walking in and listening to Charlie Brown going womp, 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 because I didn't hear a fucking word that anybody said. Like, the first meeting that I went to, I remember, like, legitimately, was in Canoga Park, California, and it was a Thursday night, and I went in there, and it was, like, my favorite meeting, because there was this little kid that was about, like, 3 years old that I got to play with the entire meeting. I didn't have to listen to a word that anybody said, and it was, like, the perfect distraction. I didn't have to sit there for an hour, like, going, like, man, this fucking sucks. Y'all need to get me out of here. But that's, I mean, that's how I, like, came into this program, man. I hear a lot of people that kind of get up here and they're like, well, you know, I felt different as a kid, and I can tell you that in no way, shape, or form did I ever feel different from anybody else. That would have required me to pull my head out of my ass for all of 3 seconds and take into account how somebody else felt. What I can tell you is that growing up as a kid, like, I didn't want to be me. You know, I remember from We used to live up in Amherst, Massachusetts, man, and I had this little crawl space in my parents' closet that I could go into the attic, and I mean, this is anywhere from 2 to 4 years old, that I would, if I ever got in trouble, man, like, my parents got angry at me, like, I was in that little crawl space, like, anywhere else but where I was, you know what I mean? I was you know, anybody else but me, because my set of circumstances, even from that age, were just, like, just unbearable. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know why they were so unbearable at that time, or what, you know, what. I just know that I did not like myself from a very early age. I remember growing up, like, I went through a school that was kindergarten to eighth grade, and I remember the kid's name that I would see him, and I would be like, man, if I could just have his set of circumstances, I'd be perfect, you know what I mean? Because he could run, jump, play basketball, get decent grades, he could talk to girls, all kinds of stuff, and, like, man, I couldn't do any of it, you know what I mean? Like, I could do all of these things, like, away from, like, normal society, but I you stuck me in any sort of school setting, and I just collapsed. I didn't talk to people. I was not a very sociable kid growing up, and it got much, much worse getting into high school. You know, people, like, got up, they played sports, and I was just, from what I understand to be now, just, like, so crippled with alcoholism that I couldn't even talk to, like, these people that I had grown up with from kindergarten. Like, my best friend from kindergarten, who I still talk to today, went to high school with me, and I not once really, like, talked to him in any sort of school setting, because the minute that I walked through those doors, like, it was just like, oh my God, dude, I can't do this, like, I need to get out of here, like, we, you know, and I wasn't, like, a stupid kid, I, you know, nothing like that, but I didn't give a shit about school, I didn't try, nothing. And sophomore year, I switched schools, and I went to public school for the first time in my life. I grew up in Catholic school. I was an altar server in like fourth grade. Now, no, I didn't do that out of any generosity in my heart. They told me that I could get out of silent reading if I went and I became an altar server. And I was like, that sounds like a great idea. Because any time where like silence was involved, like my head was going crazy, and I didn't need any of that. That was not a part of my game. And then they told me that I had to like be there earlier than when school started, and sometimes on the weekends, and sometimes on the holidays. And I immediately remember running to the principal's office, not the principal, but the vice principal. And I said, I've made a major mistake. I cannot do this altar servant thing. They want me to be here on the weekends. And she very calmly and slightly agitatedly kind of explained to me that that was not how the world worked. I was pretty upset about that. But I, you know, whatever. I did what I had to do. And when I switched to public school is when really like everything changed, because I met people that were like me. I met people that I knew were as uncomfortable as I was, and they had found the solution that I seem to have been missing my entire life. I remember the first time that I drank was with a couple of buddies that I had been introduced to before I had even gotten to school, and everybody else got drunk, and I did not, because I was, like, dumping it out in the side, like, because alcohol tasted like shit to me. Like, I didn't like it. But it was like, the first time that I was like, well, this is actually kind of cool. Like, these people aren't really, like, I don't feel like they're judging me. You know what I mean? And it was kind of like the first experience to, like, getting there, and then maybe a couple months later, like I got drunk with some kids at it was the homecoming football night. I got so drunk that I blacked out and took a bus into Bethesda. The only thing that I remember was like getting on the bus and like going. I don't remember shit all else. I remember that I didn't like it because I was really dizzy, and I was fortunate enough not to throw up. But I do remember, man. I do remember we brought over a bunch of alcohol, and the kids that I was with were like normal people. And after we got done drinking, they were like, well, let's leave the rest of it at this person's house, because they were nice of us to let us drink here. And I was like, dude, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? Like, give me my alcohol. Like, I paid for that shit. You know, it was, that was just kind of like the recurring themes throughout my entire alcoholism was, or at least while I was drinking, was, I got as fucked up as I possibly could from sunup to sundown. From the first time I got drunk, I knew that if I got drunk, starting in the morning, that I would be okay. Because all I had to do was stay fucked up from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep. Because the best way that I can describe it is like, man, when I drank, I didn't think about anything. Like, there was no, you know, am I good enough? Am I cool enough? Am I good looking enough? Am I going to throw this person from a bridge? Or, you know, like, it just didn't matter. Like, it didn't matter that I was failing, like really stupid classes, man. Like, classes that I should have been able to take and get through in no time. It just, I couldn't even show up for class and, like, do anything. I wasn't like a big consequence kind of person when I was drinking. Like, my mother bailed me out of almost every single situation I ever got myself in. Because when I was drinking, I was in school a lot of it. And my senior year, like, I didn't even go to like the first month and a half of classes, and nobody like let my parents know that, nothing like that. And so my mother works for the school system, and she came in there after like 2 months, and so I was skipping school every day to go get drunk. And what I got from skipping school every day to go get drunk was a class schedule that involved me going to three classes a day. I got an entirely new counselor, and the entire like first 2 months of my senior year like stricken from the record. And I was like, that seems backwards, but okay, like sounds good to me. And somehow like I just barely made it through high school. I had a teacher that was going to fail me for consumer math, which I don't know if anybody's ever taken it, but it's like balancing checkbooks, shit like that, like basic math that you learn in elementary school. And I had enough people like advocating for me that were like, this kid's not staying at our school next year. Like, it's just not happening. They wanted me gone more than I really wanted to be there. After high school, I got like my first introduction to this whole like sobriety thing. The night after my graduation, so like 3 o'clock in the morning of graduation night, a couple of very large men came and picked me up and stuffed me in a car and said, "You're coming with us." Now, I didn't really know what was happening because like I was still like comatose from I think I'd been asleep for maybe an hour, and I kind of fought them on it. I wasn't like too keen on getting in a car with a bunch of fucking strangers, but they told me you could walk out of here in handcuffs or you could just walk out of here, and I was like, well, I don't know if I needed to be handcuffed. So I walked out there and they stuck me in this car and they took me out to Davis, West Virginia. Now I had no idea where I was. They shoved me in a room that, if anybody's seen like some like really low rate horror movie that's like takes place on the highway, like it looked like one of those highway motels that you just like go in and they shove you in this room and the room's almost pitch black. There was a couple of other kids in there and they kept bringing more on in. And man, I'll tell you what, I had never been so scared in my life because I had no idea what was going on. They took all of my piercings out. They gave me like a pair of shoes, a pair of pants, a shirt, and some like rations. And we're like, all right, now you're going to get in this van. And they dropped me off in the middle of the woods for 3 months. Man, I'm going to tell you this right now. Like, I grew up in the city. The woods is not like my place to be. And I absolutely hated it. But me being the survivor that I am, I was like, I'm going to do what it is that I need to do in order to get out of here in some sort of quick fashion. And that didn't really happen because they wanted me to like do like emotional things and like, you know, talk about my feelings. And that really wasn't on my agenda. I got really good at like building traps and setting up shelter and making fire because that's the point of wilderness, right? Nah, apparently not. I missed that up. That wilderness therapy aspect to it. And they told my mother after a month, they said, you know, we have no doubt that if we dropped him off in the middle of the woods that he would be able to survive. However, when it comes to like any sort of emotional peace whatsoever, he just hasn't done anything. Like everybody else is like crying in a circle and I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with these people? Like, I don't know about this. This is a little bit too hippie for me. I made it out of that program, like, just barely. I don't really know how I did. They always, like, suggested, like, going someplace else, and I was at a weird age for them, so I ended up going right back home. And I don't even think I was really, like, out of wilderness before I was getting high. I had a home pass, and, like, me and a couple of the buddies that went on the home pass with me were getting high and all kinds of other stuff, and I was a changed man after that. I remember they took us to one meeting a week, and it was a meeting in the middle of nowhere in some God only knows city, Maryland, that borders West Virginia somewhere. And I walked in there, and man, it was a typical AA meeting. Like, there were a whole rack of people with absolutely no teeth. And they were all above like the age of 60. And I was like, dude, I'm not an alcoholic. What the hell is wrong with you people? But I remember going back to that meeting after I went home and got fucked up. And I was like, hey, I'm here and I'm changed. I'm going to stay sober because I really don't like getting fucked up anymore. And I don't even think it was like 3 hours until I was out of that program that I was getting high again. it didn't work out for me. I was able to find my first rehab romance while I was in Wilderness. It seems really fucked up to say just because, like, I was in the middle of the woods and I met this girl and she was perfect. And that was like the biggest nightmare. Next 18 months of my life was... I kept trying to, like, get away, and she just kept showing up at my house. And I think by that time, like, I was too fucked up really to care. I had a job. I was going to school. I was going to college, community college, like, down the street, taking, like, two classes. It was my mission to stay fucked up from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep. Because I was way too uncomfortable to deal with me on any given day. And I was in so many horrid situations that I just needed to get myself out of. I had a work schedule that worked around my using. So I would go to work for like 2 hours in the morning and 3 hours at night. I was working at a daycare. And it was perfect, you know what I mean? Because I would go to school in between. I could go to school, or I could be getting fucked up on the way to school. Like, it didn't matter. Nothing, you know, the best way that I can put it is I had a few jobs when I was getting fucked up. And that was drinking, working, going to school, and showing up for my family. And at any point in time, if any of those ever conflicted, drinking one. I remember my grandmother's 85th birthday. Like, I had to drive separately from my family because I couldn't be around my family sober. My family is very, like, they're like country club people, and I really didn't fit that mold growing up. I hated every minute of it. They were like, "Oh, we're gonna go to the country club and go have dinner." I was like, "Fuck, man, I just want to, like, stay home. Like, is that cool?" They never let me do that once. But I mean, that's exactly what my alcoholism was like. Is drinking came first each and every time. It never. Never really changed. After about a year and a half of just, like, straight drinking, going to work, failing two classes at community college, I got arrested 3 times in the span of 4 months. I don't know how I did that. Like, it still boggles my mind to this day that that's even possible. But apparently I just had this big badge across my forehead that said arrest me. And my parents had pretty much had enough of my shit. They told me that they told me that I could either, I could go be homeless or I could go to rehab. And I was like, well, you find me a rehab and we'll talk about it. And, they found a rehab in Southern California, and man, that was awesome. I was like, you're going to send me to Los Angeles to go to rehab? Yes. Okay. Not a problem. That sounds better than being homeless. I went out there on February 24th of 2008, and I went into this rehab, and the first thing I saw was this big sign on the wall that said, "If you have done drugs in the past week, we cannot accept you because we are not a detox facility." And I was like, "Shit, man, I got fucking drunk yesterday. I'm not gonna tell them that. I clearly can't tell them that because then I won't get in." Don't ask me why I made that shift in my mind. Like, it really didn't make sense to me. Because I really didn't want to be sober. I just wanted to stop getting arrested. That was it. I had no desire to be sober. When I got sober and, like, I tried to quit drinking, I would sit in my bed, like, rocking back and forth because I had so many different wars raging inside of my head on what to do. Like, I mean, it was physically incapable for me to get out of bed without drinking. So I told these people in rehab that I had, like, a week sober when I went there. And I didn't really think much of it, but it'll play a small part later on. This was a 3 month to a year long facility. And I spent my 3 months, and I was like, yes, I'm going home. And that really wasn't the case. They forced me to stay out there for 8 months I spent in that rehab. And this rehab shaped everything that I do today. simply because they took me to an AA meeting every single night, whether I wanted to or not. And all nights I did not. They forced me to get a sponsor. They forced me to start working steps. I mean, they didn't force me. They said, you know, if you get a sponsor, then we won't take away your cell phone privileges, or we won't take away your computer privileges. And that really kind of pissed me off. So I said, all right, fine, I'll buck up and do it. And what I did was, the first meeting that I went to, I found the goofiest looking person that I could possibly find at a meeting. And in downtown Hollywood, there's a chock full of nut jobs. So I found a guy. He had a completely shaved head except for like two spiked out hair pieces and a long goatee, and had changed his name to sound like Lucifer. That's a true story. It didn't really work out very well. He was a nice guy, like, let me say that. He was a very nice guy. He just really wasn't willing to help me out in the way that I needed to. What it ultimately ended up doing was, after, I think, two or three sponsors, I finally found somebody that that I had enough respect and enough whatever for, that I asked him to sponsor me. You know, I was sitting in a meeting at my sober living, and not listening, you know, talking, running my mouth like a jackass, like usual. You know, just to give you an idea of that, when I was maybe 3 months sober in Santa Monica, the guy that was speaking stopped at the meeting and said, "Don't be like that kid, because he's never going to make it." I went back to that meeting every single week just to show him I was still there, too. I heard this guy just get up from a podium and just, I mean, I was talking with Lewis before on the way here, and he just belted out this, "Hey, don't you know who I am, Holmes?" And like, dude, the minute that he said that, man, it all clicked. I got it. That was how I had lived my life up until that point. If I met you at any point in time, that was my demeanor. That was how ginormous my friggin' ego was. I had this, I used to tell people, like, you could stick a bus full of holy people on a bus, right? And it could be coming straight at me, trying to help me. And they would stop, they would look at me and turn around, because there's no help in that motherfucker. It was impossible as far as I was concerned. What happened was, I asked this man to sponsor me, and I started doing what he said, not because I believed him, but because I knew that he had something that I had been missing. You know what I mean? This guy was talking about, like, you know, as young as 4 years old, sitting in a crawl space, sitting there with a knife, thinking about whether or not he should kill himself. And that made sense to me. You know what I mean? And I could tell that he didn't think that way anymore. He had things like "believer" tattooed on his knuckles, and I thought that was really weird, because people came and talked to me about God, and I was like, you guys are fucking stupid. That is not going to help me with any of my issues. My issues are that I need to find a job, I need to stop getting arrested, and I need to start being a productive member of society. God has absolutely no place for me, no help for me when it comes to stuff like that. He would call me up every once in a while and say all these really profound things like, you know, "I'm just calling to tell you that your head's a fucked up place and you need to get out of there." And I would just be like, dude, how in the world does he know these things? You know, I would call him up, and he would just be like, "You know, I always know when you're doing well, because that's the only time you ever call." And these were shocking things to me, because I thought I was really, really intelligent and that nobody could figure out my game. You know, people talk to me about, I hear people say that they were afraid of doing a fourth and a fifth step. And I was so egotistical and arrogant that my thought process when it came to doing a fourth step was, I have no problem with this. Like, this guy's not going to tell me anything that I don't already know. I was like dead wrong. It was, I remember doing this fifth step with him in Big Bear, California, in a hotel room. And I was so far out of my element, it wasn't even funny. And this man debated with me for 2 hours as to why I wasn't God. I was not like the literal sense, but like the way that I acted, my actions showed that's how I live my life. Like, why aren't these people acting like this? Because this is what I would do. why are they not doing it like I would do? I think I'm a pretty decent person. Yikes. It took a really, really long time for me to see that. And what happened is I walked out of that room, and it was the first time that I had ever... I know how to describe it now, but I walked out of that room, and it was the first time that I was, like, okay. I remember looking up at the stars and just being like, holy shit, man, like, there's stars in the sky. You know what I mean? Because I was always so concerned with what was on my feet, because I was always looking down like this. Like, that's how I walked, that's how I lived my life, man. And that was the first time that I'd ever, like, taken the time to really look up and actually see the stars. I now understand it, as somebody has now described it to me, it was the first time that I never felt connected to anything in this lifetime. That was something that had completely eluded me for my entire life. Growing up, like, I understand now, like, it was just massive disconnect from you and from God and from everybody else around me. What ended up happening was I got to my eighth step, and I looked at the first name on that list, and I said, there is not a chance in hell that I'm doing that. And I convinced myself fully that I needed to go back to school, that I just needed to go back and move in with my parents, and I hopped on a plane and came back to the East Coast. It was 5-6 months before I turned 21 and I was drinking again. I started going to some meetings around my area that kind of tripped me out a little bit, and I called him about it, and they were like a knockoff group of one that he had gone to out there, and he was like, yeah, I don't think you should go to those meetings anymore. And I was like, yes, that is permission not to go to meetings. You know what I mean? Like, I got permission from somebody in AA that has some time. And, you know, it was all of like a 2-month run that was the most horrible and miserable 2 months of my life. Everything that, like, that feeling of connectedness that I felt when I had walked out and done that that fifth step, like, was gone entirely. And I was back to, like, not being able to get out of bed in the morning without taking a drink. What ended up happening was I got incredibly drunk by myself on Christmas night at a family party. Now, everybody else was drinking, but, like, they're normal people. They didn't get drunk. And I woke up Christmas Day with one of the worst hangovers that I've ever had, and I don't get hangovers. I always took care of myself. I always drank enough water, Advil, I don't know what it was. But I woke up with one, and for whatever reason, I had had enough. And I said, you know what, I'm done with this, and I don't want it anymore. And the smart thing, like, I wish I could tell you that, like, I ran back into meetings, and I got involved, and I did all of this. I stayed sober for the first 3 months on the World of Warcraft plan. And what that looks like is I sat in front of a computer screen for 12 hours a day. I would go to school if I had to. I would go to work. But then the minute that I got home, it'd be right on the computer. Like, yeah, I'm going to tell you right now, I hate World of Warcraft. It is the worst video game I've ever played, but I could not stop playing it. It was the only solution aside from drinking that I could use at that point in time. And I started going back to those crazy meetings, and I found a shitty sponsor that I didn't get along with, but, you know, whatever. I went to Icky Paw in 2009 or 2010, I don't remember, in New York. And I found another person that had reminded me of my first sponsor. And what I did was I went up and I asked him to sponsor me, even though he lived in New York. He was like, that's cool. I mean, I told him flat out, I was like, dude, I'm willing to, like, take a bus up here. I don't care. Like, you've got something that I want. And he said, that's all right, but let's try and find you somebody that is closer to your area first. And so what happened was I went back, and over the next couple of days, I got a phone call from somebody in Delaware. And then I got a phone call from who is my current sponsor now. And I remember going up, and I remember meeting him, and I remember being like, this is fucking weird, I'm out of here. I was in so much pain by that point, because I was, like, pretty close to a year sober, really wasn't working any steps, and I had absolutely no God in my life. And I broke down at one point, and I remember calling him and being like, "Will you sponsor me? Like, I can't take it anymore. Like, this is horrible, man." You know, of course, he said sure, and he started taking me through this process. And I still fought it, even going through it, man. Like, people would tell me to pray all the friggin' time, and I was like, "Dude, I don't know what you understand. Like, I am incapable of doing that. Prayer is not in my vocabulary." You know, I went up through the steps with him again, and I got to my A step, and I stalled out. You know what I mean? Like, I did a couple of easy amends. You know what I mean? Like, I went up to my grandmother and I was like, "Hey, Nana, like, sorry that I was, like, you know, stealing money every once in a while and, like, doing some stupid shit." And, you know, she just looked at me and was like, "I don't give a fuck. That's between you and your mother." Like, those were almost her exact words. you know, but the really, like, big ones, I left off to the side and just didn't bother with them for a really long time. And what ended up happening was I had gotten involved with a girl who still using which is such a bad idea, but you know, whatever. She left, and I was left with absolutely nothing, and it was just me, myself, and I, without a solution, because I wasn't doing any amends, I wasn't doing anything, I sure as shit wasn't praying, and I ended up in the padded room of Suburban Hospital. I don't remember how I got there. I don't remember what I said upon walking in there, but they clearly thought that I was enough of a threat to myself that they were going to stick me in a padded room. And I did not fully comprehend a first step until that very, very moment. I understood powerlessness. Like, I understood fully, like, if I put alcohol into my body, I can't stop. You know what I mean? When I start drinking, something happens to me that doesn't happen for other people, and I just keep drinking until I can't take it anymore. But that unmanageability part really didn't sink in, you know what I mean, until I'm sitting there with, I think it was like 2.5 years sober, inside a padded room, like, what the fuck is my life coming to? And I walked out of that room. They didn't keep me there, because they were like, "Well, are you suicidal?" And I was like, "No, I mean, I, you know, for me, like, they need to ask me if I'm homicidal, because that's usually where my mind goes, not suicide." That's how I got out of that one. And I walked out of that room, and it was the first time that I actually knew that I needed help from something that wasn't me. That was really when I started, like, actually trying to pray. I started praying, you know what I mean? Like, I started saying, like, versions of the third step prayer and being like, "Oh, yeah, you know, like, help me out. Like, I want to stay sober today. I might want to help some people, but not really. Just help me to do what I need to do." And things didn't, you know, it got a little bit better. But, you know, I would always stagnate, you know, partially into it. At least now, the way that I understand, like, a second step. Like, today, I can tell you that, like, I am an absolute nutcase without God and without alcohol. You know what I mean? Like, if I have to have one of those two, or it's just bad. Everything is bad. The best way that I can put it, like, I went and I bought a new car, like, 2 weeks ago, or last weekend, and I went in there, and I went in there partially with God, but partially on my own thing, and, like, I test drove this car, and it was perfect, and I was like, "You know what? This is not good enough for me. I need something else to fill that hole." And so I was like, "I need to have the new car." And it was like 3-4 hours of absolute hell sitting in this dealership, like, fuck. You know what I mean? And it wasn't until I was like, "You know what, please, like, if this is," you know what I mean? I said prayer after friggin' prayer in order to, you know, just to be able to walk away from the situation. You know what I mean? Like, that's what my insanity looks like on any given basis, is I will interject my ego into absolutely anything. If it is something good for me, I just want more of it. If it's going to make me feel a little bit better, I just want more of it. I'm not going to be okay with just this that's exactly what I want and exactly what I need, but it's not good enough for me. You know what I mean? I need to be the coolest kid on the block. I need to, you know, have all the best tattoos. Whatever it is, it's got to be the best, and I always will need more. And without a higher power in my life, that's what my life looks like every single day. I can tell you that I wake up in the morning, man, and I take like a couple of minutes to pray, just because there's so many things that I need help with. You know what I mean? And I'm not like, you know, please, you know, help me to be completely removed of this. The way that I understand 6 and 7 is it's really not up to me whether or not they really get removed or not. But it is, I mean, I can, there's nothing stopping me from saying in the morning something to the effect of like, you know, please take this situation and do whatever you will with it. Because what I've found is the more detailed that I can be, the better it is that I kind of, the less and less that I kind of interject my will and my ego into the situation. When it came to 8 and 9, it was funny, man, because like none of those amends were ever as bad as I thought they were going to be. You know, I had some that weren't like the greatest in the world. I went and I made amends with my mother, and she told me that she just wanted me to be a decent person and this, that, and the other, and wanted me to remove all my tattoos and take out everything. And I was like, I don't think I can do anything for you. You know what I mean? Like, I'll show up for you. You know what I mean? And I will try my best to be a son to you, but like, I can't change the way that I look for you. You know what I mean? There's nothing along those lines that I can really offer people. That amends that took me back out when I was in California was one of the hardest ones that I had to do. I remember sitting in my parents' backyard smoking a cigarette, and I had already reached out to them once, and they really weren't too like stoked that I had gotten back into contact with them. And it had been a couple of weeks, so I tried to get in touch with them again, and when I did, they were just like, what do you want? You know what I mean? But I also, at the same time, when I was sitting on that swing set, like, one of my immediate thoughts was like, man, if you don't do this, you are going to drink again. It is inevitable. And it sucked. Like, it wasn't fun. They were really pissed off that I called them and bothered them again. But I did it. You know what I mean? And I'm still sitting here today, which is nothing short of a miracle. You know, by all means, like, I should not be here. I have not done anything right in sobriety, really. You know what I mean? Like, the only thing that I've really done right is, like, go to meetings and try to help other people. For a little bit of time, I learned how to tattoo in a meth den. I don't suggest it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a horrible idea. Like, it's really bad, like, when you're, like, 6 hours in and, like, the guy comes up and he's, like, tweaking and you're like, what the fuck am I supposed to do now? You know, man, it's truthfully on any given day, man, like I heard somebody say it a little bit ago or at a meeting a couple weeks ago that, you know, God's grace is defined as something that is undeserved. You know what I mean? And when it comes to like me staying sober by God's grace, it is something that is completely undeserved. Because I have treated people like shit. I have stolen from people. It's not like when I got here, I was in line to be Times Person of the Year. Like, people didn't really want me around. I had a bunch of people that, like, I talked to today that would intentionally ignore my phone calls when I would call because they knew that it was never going to be anything good. Nothing. I was physically incapable of bringing anything to life. You know what I mean? Like, if you had anything, all I wanted to do was take it. That was it. I saw people as nothing more than instruments for me to get what I want. Because I never had money. I never had anything. So it was a hustle to get fucked up every day. You know what I mean? I had to rely on the kindness of others and sleight of hand to do what I needed to do. And I don't know. Before I really start rambling, I'm going to let you guys open it up.